It is the Federal News Countdown, as we do every Friday at this time, and I'm pleased to welcome to the program today two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. My guests on the program today, returning for his 934th appearance on the Federal News Countdown, it's Frank Reeder. It's great to see you, my friend. Thanks
always
for coming
pleasure.
In today. It's always good to have you on the program. And for his first appearance on the Federal News Countdown, hopefully not his last. If, it depends how nice I am to you, I suppose. Right, Trey?
Absolutely.
It's Trey Hodgkins of Tech America. It's good to have you on. And I got to send a shout-out to your colleague, Olga, who loves this program and is my one fan of the Federal News Countdown. And I appreciate her suggesting that I have you on. I'm glad to see you, and I appreciate you being here.
Happy to be here, too.
We have, of course, as we do every week, three stories that each of our experts have chosen as the most important federal news stories of the week. They're posted on federalnewsradio.com right now, and you can see those stories there and read them as we follow along. But we start this week on the countdown, as we always do, with
number three.
The third most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by Trey Hodgkins, is a Federal News Radio story headlined, Amid Cuts, DOD Cyber Spending, a Growth Spot. And this revolves around my conversation with Jim Lewis of the Center for Strategic and International Studies this week. Cyber is like the one thing that people are grabbing onto in the DOD budget as a positive sign because of all the talk about cuts. Is that fair to say?
It is. I think it's slightly larger, though. I think it's IT investment in general. Mm-hmm. There's a very good recognition, not only at DOD, but in the federal government, that there are true savings to be found in IT investments that can be generated relatively shortly. Things like data center consolidation, In the near term, should generate savings, and people are moving out on those things. Cyber is something, though, at DOD that obviously the ships don't sail, the planes don't fly, and the boots don't hit the ground without information to meet the mission mm-hmm. and make it a success. And those networks have to be protected, so that's going to be a critical element.
Now, David Langstaff of the Defense Business Board was on with Tom Temin on the Federal Drive this morning. Tom and Jason talked to him. And the Defense Business Board is saying that Terry Takei, the CIO at the Defense Department, should have more autonomy and more authority to make some of the changes that need to happen there in IT. Do you think that makes a difference, what the CIO can and can't do, as long as somebody can or can't do what needs to be done in IT there?
Well, I think you may recall that at the end of Secretary Gates' term and the first part of Secretary Panetta's term, there was in the first part of Ms. Takei's term, mm-hmm. there was a shuffling of the whole IT management structure at the DOD. The joint staff part was restructured. The DISA piece was restructured. And only recently has that been clearly restructured and the authorities realigned.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Takei is clearly in the center of that now. And I think that what we're seeing is now the ability to move out with the requisite authorities behind them to make the decisions they need to manage the processes.
Trey Hodgkins' third most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline, Amid Cuts, DOD Cyber Spending, a Growth Spot. Frank Reeder, your number three story this week is from the New York Times. The headline is, Personal Data's Value, Facebook is set to find out. Now, the Facebook IPO story is a big story in the business community, but I'm curious as to your take on why this is relevant in the federal space.
Thanks, Francis. The reason I picked this story is precisely not because I think the IPO was important, but because what the Times was speculating, and ultimately I think will prove to be the case, that the value for an enterprise like Facebook is in the personal information holdings that it has.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the larger conversation about how personal information is moving and being used, and the interest, it seems to me, from the standpoint of Federal News Radio's audience, is that government also holds enormous information stores. Clearly, there are statutory constraints, some of which we are intimately familiar with respect to personally identifiable information. But I don't think that we are yet mining the statistical information that could be garnered from what in the techie world is referred to as the analytics
mm-hmm.
That we're developing through more extensive use of technology. And that's the piece. It's the value proposition around personal information in aggregate form that I think is the angle that I wanted to pursue, not how wealthy Mark Zuckerberg or his interior decorator has gotten as a consequence of the IPO.
Now, when we did our little predictions deal at the end of 2011, one of my predictions was that analytics was going to be one of the buzzwords in 2012 in the federal government space. Do you agree with that?
I've won buzzword bingo today.
And your prize is you get to be on the show again sometime.
Yeah, precisely. And I think we're beginning to see that. I mean, certainly, folks like Dave McClure and at GSA understand that. Mm-hmm. But generally, I think I'm coining a word, you're hearing it here today, called the aposphere.
I like that one.
That in the aposphere, we're going to see more and more exploitation of resources, not by government agencies per se, but the basic resource, the information will come from public sources. And that's, it seems to me, the story in what is the market value being attributed to Facebook.
Trey, one thing, a lesson that you can take away is that you should do as Frank does. And when you coin a word around me, you do it on the air so then everybody knows that I stole it if I start to claim it. Well, that's
it won't
true.
Stop, I'm
that's true. Frank Reeder's story number 3 on the Federal News Countdown this week is Personal Data's Value, Facebook Set to Find Out, and it's from the New York Times. You can read it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When In-Depth continues on the Federal News Countdown, number 2 stories as chosen by Frank Reeder and Trey Hodgkins on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's only food and wine variety show.
On Sunday, February 5th, we're going to kick off Valentine's Day just a tad early. There's going to be lots of chocolate in studio with the Ritz-Carlton, D.C. And have you heard about Rogue Sessions? They're happening, and we're going to hear all about it.
Valentine's Day, that means love, everyone. That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 AM.
Did you know that organ and tissue transplants save thousands of lives each year? This 2012, make the decision to save lives by becoming an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Registering is easy. Do it whenever obtaining or renewing your driver's license. Or register online at beadonor.org. That's beadonor.org. This is Hillary Howard. I registered to be a donor and have the heart on my driver's license to prove it. Join me and register today.
What is the strategic vision for today's U.S. Air Force? How is the Air Force managing in an era of fiscal constraint? What is the Air Force doing to improve its operations and become more efficient and agile? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with his very special guest, Aaron Connaughton, Undersecretary of the U.S. Air Force. Next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Meeting mission goals through health, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Office of Personnel Management says all federal employees who use the Federal Employee Health Benefits Plan will soon be able to download their own personal health records. Providers in the FEHBP are adding the Blue Button technology, initially spearheaded by the Department of Veterans Affairs. OPM says it'll let fans access their own lab results, medication and problem lists, allergies, appointment data, and wellness reminders from a secure website.
General Dynamics IT is meeting the challenges of a complex healthcare environment that requires far-reaching experience and full-spectrum capabilities. Government, military, and commercial health payer organizations rely on General Dynamics IT's health services, solutions, and support to tackle their toughest issues. General Dynamics IT's broad understanding of healthcare data, military health missions, fraud, waste, and abuse protection, and more ensures support and innovation tailored to your real-world needs. Today's healthcare challenges are formidable. To learn more, go to GDIT.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. We talk with Rear Admiral Matthew Klunder, the new Chief of Naval Research. Plus, what if the Hill goes info diving in your agency? We'll have advice for how to respond. And we'll bring you the first of a three-part series with Congressman Dan Lundgren on transparency and cybersecurity. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My experts on the Federal News Countdown this week are Trey Hodgkins of Tech America and a former OMB official, among other distinguished positions in the federal government, Frank Reeder. Every time you come on the show, Frank, I read your bio and I go, I can't believe this guy wants to be associated with me.
I can't either.
and yet you continue to subject yourself to my abuse. On the Federal News Countdown this week, we're up to...
Number two!
The second most important federal news story of the week from Trey Hodgkins is headlined, Cybersecurity Bill in U.S. Senate Falls Behind Reid Schedule. This is a story from Bloomberg. And, Trey, the Senate has been trying to do cybersecurity legislation, it seems like, for decades. And we got signs periodically, we're just about ready to do it, we're just about ready to do it, and then a story like this comes along, and it doesn't appear that they're just about ready to do it after
all. We're not really ready to do it yet, I don't believe. I think it's almost 4 years now, by my recollection, that we've been working on pieces of it at least.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certainly significant portions that I think there's a long time support for. FISMA reform would be one of them. But in this case, it's encountering a lot of problems, a lot of challenges, and we're going through the machinations of working with staff as we speak to try and build better support for the things that are on the table right now.
Mm-hmm. One of the quotes in the story is from Bruce McConnell, counselor to Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, and he makes, I think, the biggest point in this whole discussion. Time is the biggest threat to a bill. I think it's because the calendar is crowded. I mean, we're 10 days away from the budget request dropping, and there are we're going to go through a lot of the same things that we went through last year. We don't have, fortunately, a continuing resolution issue to deal with this year
for the first time in
who knows how long. But we have a debt limit debate that's going to happen, and of course it's an election year, so there is a lot to deal with. This is very complex. What do you expect to see if we have this conversation in, say, October? What do you think we'll have at that point?
Well, I think that there are some significant challenges to advancing the legislation right now. We've always said that it is certainly a viable approach to try and do all this together. We're curious why the latest iteration doesn't include pieces that were in there as recently as the middle or latter part of last year.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that things are going to be added and things are going to be dropped to build support as they move it forward. But we thought some of those had broad consensus and are not there.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, I think that we may see pieces of it move, and that's certainly our position. If we can't get to a comprehensive bill, we ought to pretty quickly realize that and then pick up those pieces like workforce development, the training provisions, the research and development, FISMA reform, the general support for data breach. Those pieces should be able to move, and we would believe that we could move those forward and make substantial cybersecurity improvements in the U.S., and we don't have to kill the whole bill for two or three other provisions we just can't get there on.
Frank, this is right in your wheelhouse. This you're an area of your expertise. What do you think would be the reason you couldn't take some of the pieces that Trey's talking about that do seem to have broad support, pass those so you're done, and try to go back to some of the things that are more contentious at a different time?
Yeah, I guess from what I can tell, that at least the majority leader in the Senate is concerned about floor time. although I think your approach is very viable because you could, under unanimous consent, pass some of the provisions that Trey alludes to. I have a slightly different view, which is that while I think there are certain provisions of the bill that are terribly important, much of what there is consensus about can also be done without legislation. So while it's troublesome in a way that the Senate hasn't been able to get its act together, specifically with respect to some of the workforce provisions, with respect to the FSMA provisions, which make a lot of sense, there's ample authority in the executive branch to do those anyway, so that it's not obvious to me that statutory authority is absolutely necessary, for example, to do FSMA reform.
So the president has made a point, and some will say it's political, to exercise some of that authority in other areas recently, and the theme that he's using is we can't wait, and referring to the inability of Congress to get things done in certain areas. So based on what you're telling me, it sounds like this would be a good situation to that would fit with that campaign.
To drag in a cliche, which I like to do from time to time, it's low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
And I think they should, can and should.
Does that make sense from your perspective, Trey?
Absolutely. And we've actually seen some agencies. The Department of Defense is one that was an early identifier of these problems. They moved out, and I think most would agree that they are probably months, if not years, ahead in preparing and defending themselves than the broader federal government. Yeah.
So if we think about it, Frank, from that perspective, then at what point, if any, does Congress's action or lack thereof become kind of moot when the agencies can move out on their own?
Well, I don't think the Congress is ever irrelevant or moot.
No, not to say that, but if the agencies can make significant progress on their own, what are they waiting for, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
And it's not clear that they're waiting. I think the OMB and DHS, I think, are likely to give it more of a push, and I think that will help. And a little active oversight from the Congress never hurts.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I think the stars are properly aligned. Legislation would be nice, but except for some provisions, perhaps, like the R&D provisions, not necessary.
Mm-hmm. Trey, Congressman Dan Lundgren has a bill on cybersecurity in the House side. He was on the federal drive the other day talking about that again with Tom Temin. What the basic differences between what's been kicked around in the Senate and what Congressman Lundgren's bill have are that the Lundgren wants to use structures that are already in place, regulatory structures already in place, and the Senate's bill would create some new ones. Is that overcomable, or is one side or the other of those a deal breaker, do you think?
I think that a consensus can be reached. I think that we have two very different processes in the chambers. The House has chosen a splintered approach for a variety of reasons. The Senate is trying to move with a comprehensive bill. The regulatory piece, Mr. Lundgren's legislation is a little lighter, if you will, with his touch on how it applies that. And the regulatory pieces in the Senate have been giving some of the companies heartburn in our membership. We believe we can get there, and one of the ways is to try and use some of the existing structures. Another way we want to try and ask them to take a look at is what's going on in the current commercial marketplace now. These are not happening in isolation, and bring some of those solutions into the federal government more robustly than we have done so far today.
I guess one of the things that I found very striking about this piece, too, and about this story as a whole, is Senator Reid, after very specifically a couple weeks back saying, this is when we're going to try to do this, now in this story saying, I'm going to do it as quick as I can, but specifically declining to give another date now. I guess he doesn't want to hear another date whoosh by as these have. Is there any significance to that, or is this just part of the deal?
I just think it indicates that they're not there yet. They, at the end of the day, it's about counting 60 votes in the Senate, mm-hmm. and they don't have 60 votes, and so they're still working to get there.
Trey Hodgkin's second most important federal news story of the week on the Federal News Countdown this week is from Bloomberg Government. The story's headline, Cybersecurity Bill in U.S. Senate Falls Behind Reid Schedule. It's linked up now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Frank Reeder's second most important federal news story of the week when In-Depth returns on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Financial Safari Radio Show features some of the best retirement planners from across the country and is your source for a common sense approach to planning for a secure retirement in Northern Virginia. Contact the father-daughter retirement planning team of Don and Jill O'Rourke at 1-800-664-7505.
Tune in to the Financial Safari with the father-daughter team of Don and Jill O'Rourke, Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. right here on 1500 WFED.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Dude, check out my new Pioneer DEH44 car stereo with built-in HD radio technology and new HD2 HD3 channels.
HD2 HD3 channels?
Get with it, man. HD2 HD3 channels are all these new free digital radio channels.
How do I listen to them?
With the new Pioneer DEH44 HD radio receiver. It's only $120 at Walmart.
Walmart? That's cool.
Yeah, just go to HDradio.com and check out the station guide. They're adding new channels all the time.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDradio.com. More radio, more value.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Tune in Sunday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio. This show features four of the D.C. region's finest business leaders. Through each of these compelling interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, and opportunities that lie ahead. The show inspires, entertains, and is full of wisdom unheard elsewhere. Tune in Sundays at 9 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio.
Still time left. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. There's lots of time left in the flu season, and there are two ways of looking at that. If you haven't gotten your flu vaccine, you still have time to get vaccinated. The alternative is that if you haven't gotten your dose of protection, you still have time left to get the flu. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, researcher Aaron Kennedy notes that flu seasons can occur from October through May, usually peaking in January or February.
It's never too late to get vaccinated, and the vaccine can still protect you against the flu as long as flu viruses are circulating.
There are flu vaccine options for different people. Everyone 6 months and older should get vaccinated. But remember that it takes a couple of weeks after vaccination for your immune response to kick in. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
For We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is the Federal News Countdown. Every week, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the three news stories that they think are most important to people who work for the government, rank them in order from number three to number one, and come in the studio with me and count them down on the Federal News Countdown. This week, it's Trey Hodgkins from Tech America and Frank Reeder. And Frank, your second most important federal news story of the week is from ABC News. The headline is Federal Government Pay Tops Businesses, says CBO report. Now, I'm not normally critical of my colleagues in the media, but I think on this particular story, my colleagues in the media did a not great job of headline writing, and this ABC story is an example of that. Do you agree with that or disagree? Yeah,
well, as I'm sure you know, very often the authors of the story have nothing to do with how the headline is written.
Fair enough.
So, and I attribute that, as you suggest, to somebody in marketing writes the headline so that the story sells. The journalism actually is pretty accurate. The reason I selected the story, interestingly, in the week in which the House once again voted to freeze federal pay, which I won't talk about, is the perils of trying to do meaningful comparability analyses on federal pay.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't read the report, the CBO methodology was simply to take the brute force approach of comparing the average salaries of federal employees to those in the private sector based entirely on education level. And they concluded, I'm sure it's statistically accurate, that high school graduates on average do better in the federal sector, whereas those with advanced degrees, compared to their cohorts in the private sector do not do as well. That doesn't take account of geography. It doesn't take account of levels of responsibility. It doesn't take account of all of the other factors that influence the labor market. And I'll confess, sin, we were chatting a bit about this on the break. This is another in the series of flawed comparability analyses dating back to the Federal Employee Pay Comparability Act, which mandated that geographic adjustments be made, again, based on general conditions in a labor market rather than specific skills required in that labor market.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to attribute innovative thinking to Mr. Rose, but as he suggested in our aside, we really need to do is dispassionately sit down and figure out, and I think there are smart people in the game who can figure it out, how one does much more nuanced comparability analyses that will result in something policymakers can use. Until then, what we're doing is creating, shall we say, fodder for empty political rhetoric. As would be evidenced by the headline on this story.
We certainly got a fair amount of rhetoric out of this story, Trey. Do you think in hindsight, now that we've had a couple of days to analyze it, did we really learn anything from this CBO report? It seems like some folks' sentiment was confirmed on both sides of the aisle, but I don't know that we really have any new facts necessarily because of this.
I don't know that we do either. I think that at the end of the day, this does become more fodder for the cannon, and the conversation doesn't necessarily get advanced.
Mm-hmm.
What we ought to be talking about is, do we have the right workforce mix with the right skill sets, and are we paying them appropriately? And to try and do these shoehorn one set of information, you know, put the square peg in the round hole, doesn't always help anyone and doesn't help resolve issues that mm-hmm. we have about workforce in the federal government.
Quantifying this is it even really a viable task, do you think, or is this just kind of a fool's errand that we're really never going to be able to get our arms around?
I'm reminiscent of the insourcing discussions and what is the real compensation package of a contracting employee
mm-hmm.
versus the compensation package of the government employees. This story has some flavor of that. But again, it wasn't necessarily always informative in that conversation.
And, yeah.
At the end of the day, we ought to be looking at the total workforce. Part of that, as you know, previous guests have noted, is we need to find the right balance between contractors and government employees to get the missions done,
mm-hmm.
And then make sure they're all paid appropriately.
Yeah. I mean, to your question, is it possible to do it? Absolutely. and maybe I'm just young and idealistic. Okay, one of the two isn't bad. But in fact, the way pay is set in most enterprises, even rather large ones, is to look at the labor pool in which you are playing and look at what it takes to become the employer of choice for the market that you're attacking. Now, the difficulty with that, and I don't mean to minimize it, is it will result in less standardization. The notion of a general schedule or even anything like it is an anachronism, and selling that politically will be very, very hard. But I think it's a journey on which we have to embark if we're going to continue to attract good people into the public sector. And Trey and I are in violent agreement. It's part of a larger conversation about how we pay people who do the public's business, whether they're on a public, on a federal payroll or on a contractor payroll.
I'm mystified, not surprised, but still mystified as to when and why it became a bad idea to want to work for the organization that serves every American citizen. I mean, I'm a taxpayer, sure, and I like to pay as small amount of taxes as I possibly can, sure. I don't think that's illogical. But the idea that a premium would be attached to finding somebody to do the most important work, at least in my view, in the United States, doesn't seem like a bad concept. I missed something somewhere.
I agree with you, and I think those of us who've had the privilege of working in some of the highest performing organizations in this town, and including OMB, which everybody loves to hate, has worked every day with extraordinarily talented people who could make a whole lot more money elsewhere, mm-hmm. but who. Because they are aligned with the purpose and value the privilege of serving the American people, or willing to do so for less than that. And that's part of what you build into the equation when you set pay.
I guess anecdotally, Trey, one of the things that I do take heart from is the fact that I continue to meet new people that work for the government. Now, they're not new to the government, but as I expand my opportunities to talk to people, and there aren't many weak links. I mean, the folks at the levels in government that I'm talking to people are real sharp and know what they're doing. And so whatever the compensation package is, either it's sufficient or there's something else that these folks are getting out of their work that's sufficient to make them want to do it and keep doing it.
Well, the federal government always presents unique challenges you can't find anywhere else. It presents ways for people to use their skills that they have never been able to use before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think part of the problem, perhaps, is that the political discussion about what is the role of government, how big should it be or how little should it be, is perhaps being rolled into a conversation and catching, perhaps negatively, the people who work for the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be what we're seeing here.
Yeah. The second most important federal news story of the week is chosen by Frank Reeder. It's from ABC. The headline is Federal Government Pay Tops Businesses, says CBO report. And we actually have a link to not only the news story, but the CBO report itself on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Frank Reeder and by Trey Hodgkins, when the federal news countdown continues on In-Depth with Francis Rose. Back in a moment.
This dream where I'm wading through a crowd. Now and then someone stops and offers me a new job, and it seems like the opportunities are endless. Soon I'm doing the work I've always wanted to do, designing smarter energy systems that transform communities, save millions of dollars, and wait, that's no dream. That actually happened. After I got my master's degree in electrical engineering from Capital College.
Capital's master's program in electrical engineering prepares you for some of today's most in-demand jobs. It's conducted online with live streaming audio, so you get the interactivity of a classroom without having to fight traffic to get there. And Capital is one of only 8 colleges and universities nationwide endorsed by IEEE as a provider of a quality engineering education.
I'm living out my dream because of Capital College. It isn't for everyone, but it's perfect for me.
For a virtual info session, session on graduate programs at Capital College, visit capital-college.edu/radio. That's capital with an O, -college.edu/radio.
The Defense Department has begun releasing details of its 2013 budget. Look for smaller pay raises, higher fees and health premiums for retirees. Secretary Panetta is also calling for another round of base realignments and closures. More details are expected February 13th when President Obama releases his full 2013 budget request. FederalNewsRadio.com's DOD page has the latest details on the Pentagon's budget. Find it at FederalNewsRadio.com. Search term DOD.
Newsmakers talk to Emily Kopp.
Rob Shriver, OPM's Deputy General Counsel for Policy.
We really are emphasizing transparency and internship opportunities. So our proposed pathways regulations require agencies to put up on our USA Jobs website some basic information about the internship opportunities that are available to them. It's a requirement that's not currently in place.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected on this program by Trey Hodgkins of Tech America and by Frank Reeder. And, Frank, your number one story of the week, and I didn't let the singers sing. I didn't cue them in time, and I apologize for stepping all over them. But, Frank, your story number one this week is from GovExec. The headline is Recovery Act Spurs Risk Management Lessons at Energy. And this ties into the Solyndra story, and there's a lot rolled into this. What is the big takeaway here that you made you think this was so important?
Well, as usual, not to answer your question first, this is a shameless attempt, opportunity for me to plug an article, a column I wrote that appeared in Government Executive last month, in which I took on a GAO report on the State Department's IPOST, their cybersecurity program, and which I pointed out that without going into the details of that, that the IG and audit community can be, shall we say, a less than constructive force. And what I loved about this article was that this was an example of an inspector general for whom it would have been a lot easier to write the "there they go again" story. Mm-hmm. Saying, in point of fact, the Recovery Act investments that are made in new energy have a fair amount of risk associated with them, that there are some winners, there are some losers, and putting a lie to the notion that you can't take risks in the public sector.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extraordinarily balanced report. It certainly doesn't absolve DOE of the responsibility to manage risk carefully, but recognize that by its very nature, investing in new technologies and new sources of energy is a risky proposition. This is the most promising piece of news I've seen all week, because it says that, you know, perhaps we're prepared to be slightly more adult about the possibility, especially with things like the kinds of projects that were funded by the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything is going to be a winner.
Yeah.
And if we only pick winners, if we only take safe bets, then we probably are not going to advance the state of the practice. And I think that's a powerful message that came through the Energy IG report, and sets, I think, a terrific standard for the IG community in particular, but the oversight community in general, that one doesn't see often enough.
The concept that Frank is talking about, Trey, is something that I imagine you see all the time in the technology community. If the only companies that ever got funded were companies that were guaranteed to be successful, some of the greatest innovations that we enjoy would never exist. Is that fair to say?
Or at least perhaps the federal government wouldn't be using them.
Yeah.
Because no one was willing to be risky and move from the old brick cell phone to something that was a little more advanced as a handheld.
Right.
We also find the same aversion to risk, and I agree with Frank that hopefully the management lessons will be learned on the acquisition workforce, mm-hmm. where there's a strong aversion to taking risk of any sort and to trying to find new and innovative ways, whether it's uptake of new technology or even just new ways of solving problems. Hopefully this will rub off elsewhere. I agree.
The part of the whole Solyndra discussion that I was most discouraged by was not the political talk about this failed and blah, we shouldn't have supported it and whatever. That's a discussion that I don't understand because I don't understand the technology behind Solyndra and I don't know what the decision making process was and all the details. What I didn't care for in that conversation was the so statement, which is, so we shouldn't do this anymore, which is what you're getting at. If we're going to decide that everything has to be perfect, then we'll never do anything. So why bother in the first place?
And the IG could have followed that line,
mm-hmm.
and it would have been, in some respects, perhaps a safer line to follow, to mm-hmm. say, me too. You know, they took risk. This is unacceptable. Look at how much taxpayer money was squandered. And doubtless, taxpayer money was lost. And like you, I'm not in a position to judge whether that Solyndra was a wise risk. But what the IG said was exactly the opposite of what the early report suggested, mm-hmm. that we need to continue to take risks and we will have winners and we will have losers.
Well, and not just the early reports, but of course, back to our 535 friends on Capitol Hill, a certain percentage of which were very happy to point out the failures and then add that so statement that I really didn't care for very much.
Correct.
The whole idea behind this, and Frank, I appreciate that you bring the Inspector General element into this because I don't think the IGs at any agencies get as much attention or focus as they deserve for the work that they do. What do we learn from this about the way, just the worldview that Inspectors General have about the agencies and the programs and so forth that they're overseeing and reviewing?
Yeah, I'm hardly in a position to characterize their worldview, but what I am hearing, and I will tell you that my column provoked some controversy in that community, is that the Inspector General community is, shall we say, a bit conflicted.
Mm-hmm.
There are those who say our job is to measure compliance, and therefore we have, we call them as we see them. Others who, and I think without knowing him personally, the IG in energy has a slightly different view, which is, to paraphrase an old joke, we call them as they are.
Mm-hmm.
And in this instance, he represents a view in the community that recognizes that the IG actually has moral influence and is more than just an enforcement official.
Frank Reeder's number one most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is Recovery Act Spurs Risk Management Lessons at Energy, and you can find it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, like all of our stories on the Federal News Countdown this week. The number one most important story is chosen by Trey Hodgkins. We'll wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose in just a moment.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented.
Platform as a service is a critical layer in the cloud stack. Infrastructure as a service was only the first step towards towards the cloud. The platform enables agencies to develop, deploy, and use applications in more agile ways. It allows them to accelerate their time to value for mission applications and continue the savings journeys that they've already begun with their journey to infrastructure as a service in this difficult, constraining budget environment.
To hear the Federal IT Challenge in its entirety and learn more about the journey to cloud computing, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Xeon processors, new HP ProLiant G7 servers are a perfect high-speed solution for lowering costs, improving utilization, and reducing server sprawl. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how together they can power your data center into the future. Talk to GovConnection's experienced federal sales team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Hey Eagles fans, tickets to All American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the Athletic Ticket Office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena. Catch the Eagles' next home game Thursday, February 9th against Lehigh at 7 p.m.
Human Capital Management for Defense is a highly anticipated training conference with over 300 delegates and key speakers, such as Lieutenant General Daryl D. Jones, Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower, Personnel and Services, U.S. Air Force, Honorable Thomas R. Lamont, Assistant Secretary of the Army, Manpower and Reserve Affairs, and Honorable Juan M. Garcia, Assistant Secretary of the Navy, Manpower and Reserve Affairs. This year's event will be held on March 12th through the 15th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington. For more info, visit hcmdusa.com. Mention code FNR for a 25% discount.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm not going to step all over the singers this time. I'm going to recognize Trey Hodgkin's most important federal news story of the week at
number one.
It is from. It's from the Washington Post. I can't even read the paper for some reason today. The headline is Obama calls again for capping government contractor pay. And this story has to do with the amount that contractors are reimbursed for executive pay. Now, Trey Hodgkin, you've chosen this as your most important story. And I will confess, the way this has been explained over the years, I'm not sure I've ever gotten it. So explain this the way that you see it, and then tell me what you think is significant about what the president is saying here.
Sure. This potentially has a ramification both on the contractor workforce as well as the government ability to meet the mission. The premise when this was first introduced and adopted in the late 90s after the Clinger-Cohen and other reforms of that era that moved us to commercial products was that government pretty quickly looked around and realized that the people working on government projects' salary levels, to Frank's earlier story, mm-hmm. were far less than their commercial counterparts. And so they created a formula that, with an incremental inflationary increase that's based in commercial salary ranges and compensation packages, to offset or increase, rather, what is being paid for government contract executives. The idea being that this helps to boost up those salary levels and make them more comparable to their commercial counterparts. And therefore, when you're in a corporation, the really smart people working on programs and projects or creating new innovations are interested in working for the government too.
Mm-hmm.
That's been in place for a long time. The number is quite large, but that's just a reflection of the salary range. It's just under $700,000. It is an allowable cost that is spread across all the contracts a contractor may hold for an executive. Previously, it was only the top five executives. The recent statutory change made it for all the employees in a company. Obviously, most of the employees in a company don't make that much money, and so the amount that we're dealing with is far less. The challenge that we see in the proposal is that it disregards that disconnect in compensation packages between the commercial sector and the government contractor the public sector contractor.
Mm-hmm.
And our concern is that you're going to see a diminishment in the ability of companies to attract their best and brightest to come work on their government challenges when they have those contracts.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that the formula, for example, is certainly something that's well worth perhaps looking at. The criteria that were created in the late 90s perhaps don't apply anymore. Those things, industry's happy to have a conversation about and adjust. But at the end of the day, we hope that we can stay with a formula-based mechanism to help increase those salaries, equalize those salaries, with ability to incrementally increase them with inflation.
I guess what I've never understood is why you just don't build that cost, whatever each company determines that to be, into what you're charging the government. And so this isn't even necessary in the first place. What am I missing?
Well, obviously companies are trying to be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
When you have the allowable cost like this and it's equal across everybody, it becomes an equalizer. It's not an offset. Companies can then be competitive in other areas. But what's more important in today's environment is that to remain competitive, companies have to try and pursue the lowest priced product that mm-hmm. they can offer to the government that's technically acceptable.
Right.
Sadly, rightly or wrongly, many people in the government acquire, they look for three bids and they're going to take the lowest one because they don't want to have somebody questioning why they didn't pick something else. It may have been a better value. So that practice does not contribute to this proposal's what it's trying to resolve in the issue that it's trying to address.
We're almost out of time. I'm going to get Frank Reeder in here. What do you see in this story, Frank? What jumps out at you?
Yeah, and again, like you, it's not an area that I'm conversant with. What I'm seeing in this story is more dealing with the optics than the reality, the perception, and in a sense, this is an easy shot to take, but I'm not sure it really gets at the basic problem.
Interestingly, Francis, when this was a legislative proposal during last Congress, when the CBO scored it, they found no savings to the Treasury. It generated no new dollars that were going to go back. It's a color of money issue.
Mm-hmm.
It is more of an optics and a political rhetoric discussion we're having, and it's one we hope we can resolve in a way around a formula.